NIE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Aboard the USS Abraham last night, President Bush was given a commander's welcome aboard the aircraft carrier and declared the major combat phase of Operation Iraqi Freedom is over and thanked the troops.
Because of you, our nation is more secure. Because of you, the tyrant has fallen and Iraq is free.
Bush made the announcement last night from the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln off the coast of San Diego after landing on the carrier in a Viking aircraft yesterday. The president has now left the vessel in a helicopter and is scheduled to visit California's Silicon Valley today. Reconstruction and aid in Afghanistan and Iraq were the top issues when Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld met with top British officials. He met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair and British Defense Minister Jeff Hoon in Britain today. Rumsfeld said hostilities, though, do continue in Iraq.
It is dangerous. There are people who are rolling hand grenades into compounds. There are people that are shooting people. And it's not finished. So we ought not to leave the world with the impression that it is.
Meanwhile, three more former Iraqi officials are now in coalition custody. It appears Scott Peterson wants a new attorney. He has a public defender, but a hearing is scheduled for today, and indications are that high-profile attorney Mark Juragus will take over the case. Peterson is accused of killing his wife and their unborn son. A woman who says she had an affair with Scott Peterson says she has decided not to attend a memorial for his wife this weekend because of potential media overkill. Tragedy in Turkey has led to violence. Turkish police fired into the air as they fought running battles with earthquake victims demanding more government help. The clashes came as hope was fading for dozens of children buried under a dormitory in the quake. The earthquake killed some 100 people.
Are you a prescription plan member who uses Clarinex, Zyrtec, or Allegra for allergy relief? Then you should know that many plans are changing the coverage level on your nasal allergy medicine, which might cost you more money. Don't let nasal allergy relief cost you more this year. Just ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray 50 micrograms. Flonase is approved to relieve the nasal symptoms from pollen, dust mites, pet dander, pollution, smoke, and strong odors. More triggers than any leading allergy medicine. Comparable efficacy and safety among Flonase and these products has not been established. For best results, use Flonase daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. To learn more about Flonase, see our ad in Fitness Magazine. Visit www.flonase.com or call 1-800-FLONASE. If the copayment for your allergy medicine is costing you more money, ask your doctor if Flonase is right for you. All it takes is Flonase.
Four college students have agreed to pay the recording industry thousands of dollars for downloading music from the Internet. The New York Times reports that the terms of the settlements call for the students to shell out $12,000 to $17,000 each to the Recording Industry Association of America for the next 3 years. A plot to skip school almost turned deadly for a Butler County, Pennsylvania teenager. The 14-year-old girl was found unconscious inside a locker at Butler Junior High School yesterday morning. She actually attends another school in...
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
A day-long conference focusing on child sexual abuse prevention is taking place in Hartford, Connecticut today. Kate Roy reports.
Statistics show one in every three girls and one in every five boys will be sexually abused by the time they reach 18. Karen Foley Shane of the Children's Trust Fund says while there are no sure signs that abuse is going on, there are things to look out for.
Watching the development of that relationship and the over-involvement of the adult in that child's life, going off alone together.
Foley Shane says most sexual abuse is committed by a father, father figure, or some other person with a close relationship. She says she hopes the conference participants come away with new ideas and perspectives on how to prevent sexual abuse of children. Kate Roy, Hartford.
And London's Royal Albert Hall will be the setting in which author J.K. Rowling will launch the latest Harry Potter saga. Rowling will appear on stage to answer questions from young fans. Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix is due June 24th.
Hi, I'm Bob like it with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm gonna get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halvesies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the IE America Radio Network, streaming on the Internet at www.ieamerica.radio.com, all around the world, broadcasting from the Sirius satellite, S-I-R-I-U-S, the Sirius satellite, now standard equipment in Ford, Chrysler, Jeep, Jaguar, Mercedes, BMW, all kinds of cars. From the depths of outer space, from the Arctic to the equator, from coast to coast. And on terrestrial radio stations from California to, or from the West Coast to the East Coast, just all across. This is the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. We had a couple of messages on our bulletin board at TomHartman.com, the message board. We've got the chat room open and live right now if anybody wants to toss anything in there. And, of course, you're welcome to call 1-800-TALK-YES. It's Friday. We don't have any guests today. We've got a bunch of topics I want to cover, but we can also go off in any direction you'd like. 1-800-TALK-YES or 1-800-825-5937. Smile Guy says, Tom read my comment out live today on the radio. I encourage everyone to come into the chat room during the show and listen between 1 and 2. And he signed it with a quote, one of my favorite quotes from Goethe, which says, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has power, magic, and genius in it. And it's so real. It is so real that this is just the absolute. When you set your mind on something and decide to go forward with it, see a clear vision of yourself in the future doing that, and attach a strong emotion to it, as Goethe explained, the universe reorganizes itself to bring that about, assuming that it's something that's not harmful to others. And Enrique from Santa Fe said, Tom read my comment on the show on April 30th, and better yet, he answered my question. Now that's real customer service for a talk show host. I've never gotten on the Michael Savage show. I called, the phone is off the hook. When I got through twice, the call screener, some 24-year-old WASP male, says, what do you want to talk about? And I say, Bush's tax cut. And he says, that's boring. And he hung up on me. So, Enrique, thanks for your comment. We don't hang up on people here on the Tom Hartman radio program. And we do take callers, 1-800-TALK-YES. And we, although, you know, the person who answers the phone will ask you who you are, where you're from, and what the subject is. That's just to let me know in advance, you know, what's going on. We don't screen calls. We don't reject calls who disagree with us, as so many other talk shows on the far right do. So our first topic for this the show today, will the neoconservatives succeed in smashing the 40-hour work week and the labor movement? Now, it's no secret. I mean, this has been right out there ever since Reagan busted up the Air Traffic Controllers Union. And it's been pretty explicit in most of the neoconservative literature. You'll certainly find it on their websites, in their magazines. William Grider in The Nation this month has an extraordinary article in which he lists the neoconservative agenda, lifting it out of their own sources, and says smashing organized labor is right up at the top of their list. Will this happen? I thought yesterday something very interesting happened, and had I known about it at the time, we would have done the show around it, or done an hour of the show around it, but I didn't learn about it until after I got off the air. And it had to do with something that was posted on the whitehouse.gov website, the real White House website, not the whitehouse.com site, or the whitehouse.org site, I guess it is, which is the interesting one. Whitehouse.com, I think, is a porno site. It takes a little effort to keep your White Houses straight here. But anyhow, I'll tell you about that in a second. First, I want to talk about what yesterday was. Yesterday was May Day. Now, I remember when I was in school learning that May Day was like this communist holiday, that the communists all celebrated May Day. The reality is, however, that the communists, the Soviet Union in particular, had hijacked May Day. They had stolen it. And because they had this myth that it was the workers' paradise, the Soviet Union. I have been in Russia several times. I've been in Kaliningrad. I was in Kaliningrad just after the fall of the Berlin Wall. I was in East Berlin while it was still East Berlin, and had to go through this whole shadowy thing to get somebody to drive us around, you know, find a taxi driver doing it all with illegal currencies and things and all kinds of strange stuff that probably, had I got caught by the Stasi at that time, I wouldn't be here right now. But anyhow, I've seen it up front and personal. And, you know, on the one hand, there were some good aspects to it in that there weren't people starving in the streets and everybody actually did have health care. But on the other hand, there were some very real problems with it in that many would argue that people didn't have the kinds of freedoms that all around the world people are calling out for. So in any case, the Soviets just kind of stole this May Day thing by, you know, this mythos of we are the workers, although the state itself had become the bosses, and that was pretty dysfunctional. But where May Day really started was in the United States. It started in the 1880s. In 1884, the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions, this is like the early precursor to the AFL-CIO. In 1884, the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions passed a resolution stating that 8 hours should constitute a legal day's work from and after May 1st, 1886. And every year on May 1st, the labor movement memorialize this May Day event as being the beginning of the 8-hour workday. Now workers prior to that time were typically forced to work 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And you could say, well, you know, nobody's forced to work. Well, actually, yeah, there were a lot back in the 19th century. There were a lot of people who were actually indentured servants. They had to work in order to pay for transportation, for example, to a place where they could get a job. People who were in poverty on the East Coast went out west to work for the railroads, for example, and found that the railroads were perfectly willing to bring them out there, but then said, okay, now you owe us $500 for the transport, and it's going to take you 2 years to work that off. These kinds of situations. And a lot of immigrants, of course, found themselves in those situations. Plus, those who controlled the jobs, I mean, there's just this consensus, hey, a workday is 14 hours. And so the union was saying, and this was the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions, said, let's make it an 8-hour day. In April of 1886, 250,000 workers were involved in the May Day movement. And that was huge. And this was just in the city of Chicago. Chicago's Commercial Club, this was their trade organization for the industrialists in Chicago, who were very opposed to the organized trades and labor unions, didn't like the idea of a union organizing or suggesting that there should be an 8-hour day or that May 1st should be the day to commemorate it. And, you know, again, with our question here right now for this half hour, will the neocons succeed in smashing the 40-hour week in the labor movement? The question, that being the question, the Chicago Commercial Club purchased a $2,000 machine gun for the Illinois National Guard to use against strikers. And on May 3rd, 1886, police fired into a crowd. This was 2 days after May Day in 1886. This was 2 days after the union had declared the eight-hour workday as being what it should be. On May 3rd, police fired into a crowd of strikers at the McCormick Reaper Works factory, killing four and wounding many. And out of this came a whole bunch of protest actions. Joe Hill was one of the leaders, and I'll let Pete Seeger introduce you to Joe Hill here.
Here's the story of Joe Hill, who was a songwriter, came over to America from Sweden at the turn of the century, and joined the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, noted left-wing union of the times, and became sort of a minor left-wing hero. And then one day, he was accused of murder, and he became a major left-wing hero of the times.
And that was what happened with Joe Hill. And Joe Hill, of course, was accused of murder in Utah. It's still being debated. Orrin Hatch just recently said, well, we really think that Joe Hill did it and that he should have been put to death. He was executed for his crime. But there are others who are suggesting that, no, he didn't. But whether or not, he wrote songs that are still being played. The Preacher and the Slave, The Rebel Girl, they're still sung today. And he was a hero to the labor rights movement for many, many years. He wrote a poem, Workers of the World Awaken. This actually was his, this was not his eulogy, this is one of his, Workers of the World Awaken, rise in all your splendid might, take the wealth that you are making, it belongs to you by right, no one will be bred for crying, we'll have freedom, love, and health. And just a little bit of a clip here from Joan Baez about Joe Hill.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, my you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
So that's Joan Baez, a song, you know, I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill. Our question is, will the neoconservatives succeed in smashing the 40-hour work week and the labor movement? And so we have this history for May Day. And, you know, regardless of those who suggest that, well, you know, May Day was this commie thing, no, the communists took it. The May Day was started by a union in the United States based in Chicago. It spread all across the United States to the late 19th century and early 20th century and is an icon for the labor movement in many parts of not just the United States, but all around the world. And now we have, yesterday, on the WhiteHouse.gov website, the President of the United States has renamed May 1st. This is part of the explicit and overt neoconservative agenda to put an end to organized labor in the United States, so that the corporatist agenda, the can just, you know, run loose. And I'd be very happy to hear your thoughts on this. If you want to call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here we have, this is WhiteHouse.gov, Loyalty Day 2003. And the president writes, on Loyalty Day, we reaffirm our allegiance to our country. Nothing about labor. Nothing about our workers who built this country. In fact, the Congress, by Public Law 85-5529, as amended, has designated May 1st of each year, I'm quoting from the President now, has designated May 1st of each year as Loyalty Day. And I ask that all Americans join me in this day of celebration and in reaffirming our allegiance to this nation. And he says, I also call upon government officials to display the flag of the United States on all government buildings on Loyalty Day. Well, you know, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? Well, when we come back from this break, I want to share with you something I saw on the History Channel last night that really is startling. This is Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network.
right turn, right turn, right turn, right turn, back to the dealership. That's a typical test drive. Now, GM introduces the 24-hour test drive. Bring home a GM car or truck. Keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
Well, let me sleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Broadcasting coast to coast, north to south, also on the Sirius satellite and on the Internet, and on terrestrial radio stations all over the United States. We're asking, will the neoconservatives succeed in smashing the 40-hour week in the labor movement? Now, I want to say right from the get-go, I am as in favor of loyalty as anybody. I consider myself a loyal and patriotic American. I vote in elections. I participate in the democratic process. I believe in the ideals that this country was founded on. And my hope is that our nation will be a shining beacon of freedom for every nation and all peoples in the world. And I think that we certainly have in many cases in our history, and in many ways we still are. And I'd like us to become more and more of that. I want to just say that right up front. I'm not engaging in anybody bashing here. What I am concerned about is timing. Last night on the History Channel, they had a special on the only other... Let me back up. They had a special on a political administration that was overtly hostile to organized labor. It was Germany in the 1930s. And in the middle 1930s, I didn't catch the year. It flew by, and I wasn't recording this thing. But I think it was around 1936. On May 1st, Adolf Hitler declared May 1st Loyalty Oath Day. And they recited on television, they recited the oath that all Germans had to make on May 1st, nationwide in all the schools. It was declared Loyalty Oath Day. Now, he did this explicitly to shut down the unions and the labor movement's celebration of May Day, which has gone all around the world as a result of this 1884 declaration by a union in Chicago that defined the 40-hour work week. We have, Ed from Dayton on the line. Ed, you wanted to talk about loyalty. Come on and welcome into the program.
Hi. Thank you so much for the attention that you're giving to this issue, because I know it seems like just a technicality, but these kinds of things are important because they are manipulating all the symbols of what it means to be an American. I looked at the website that you were talking about there, where it has the proclamation, and it says, to be an American is not a matter of blood or birth, and I'm wondering how all the Native Americans who were here before the European invasion feel about that. But aside from that, to be a U.S. citizen, I thought it was a matter of blood or birth or of naturalization, but he's saying we're bound by this, you know, need for loyalty.
Yes,
and I just think that's crazy.
Yeah, I think that don't you think, Ed, that it is important for Americans to have a sense of loyalty, that, you know, I feel good when I say the Pledge of Allegiance. It might be because I grew up doing it. I mean, it might just be an old positive anchor from childhood, but you know, I feel good about that. But to take the labor movement's day and co-opt it and change the name of it and essentially mandate that through our schools, seems to me a little strange.
Well, I think that it does resemble the German kind of politics that was going on in Germany in the 30s, and I think that it is intended to make another effort. The whole idea, history of Law Day, the whole reason for Law Day was to try to deflate International Labor Day. I think we ought to say, if you want to have a loyalty day, why don't you do that on the first Monday in September, and we should have May 1st as Labor Day. I was listening to the BBC this morning. They have a bank holiday this weekend.
Right. Or, you know, just make it May 2nd. I mean, why pick May 1st out of 365 days in the year? Well, I think we know why. Thanks, Ed. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for calling in. Also, we see that now the Bush administration is promulgating administrative rules that will eliminate time and a half pay for anybody who makes over $22,100 a year. If you make over $22,100, you no longer have a 40-hour work week in the United States, according to rules that the Bush administration is putting forward. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be back in just a minute.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Tensions are running high among immigrant workers from countries in Central America working in the United States on temporary visas, as tens, if not hundreds of thousands, may find out in a matter of days whether deportation is in their future. Some 347,000 Honduran, Nicaraguan, and Salvadoran workers are in the U.S. on temporary visas, and for many, those visas expire in July. The rest expire in September. The government could renew the visas, but it must announce its intent to do so at least 60 days before the visas expire. That gives the government until Monday to notify the workers, and so far, they've heard nothing.
Justice for janitors was the May Day rallying cry for workers around the U.S. yesterday. Tens of thousands of custodians saw their union contracts expire this week, and some could be headed to picket lines soon. The union representing 5,000 Silicon Valley janitors has set a strike date of May 17th because of stalled contract talks. And janitors in Portland, Oregon led a march of about 500 through their city. Although their old contract expired yesterday, union negotiator Marcia Suttenberg says there's enough progress being made at the bargaining table to merit a two-month contract extension.
We're totally happy if the contract just come to the table and offer our people decent wages and a benefit that they can will allow them to take their kids to the doctor. Damn, we've got a deal.
Janitor Felipe De Jesus rejects the notion that his employers can't afford to pay him a living wage and provide his family with health insurance.
They're saying they don't have enough money, but they're the ones hanging on to all the money and it doesn't come down to all the workers.
Portland's janitors hope to have a new deal hashed out by the end of June. Otherwise, they say they'll strike as a last resort.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking this half hour about whose money is it? How do we fund democracy? New question, if you've got some thoughts on this, we're at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937 to call the Tom Hartman Program. And this is a wonderful question. Whose money is it? I was listening the other day to one of these right-wing talk show guys, and he was talking, you know, somebody called in about taxes and quack, and the guy says, you know what these liberals forget is they forget that it's our money. Well, that's a good point. But is it? See, we live in a constitutional democratic republic, and we agreed back in 1776 that there were certain things that we wanted our government to do. We agreed back in 1776 that we wanted to have a navy and an army that would defend this country. We agreed that we wanted to have police that would defend our homes. We agreed collectively that we wanted to have fire departments. In fact, Ben Franklin helped organize one of the first fire departments. It paid for by the taxpayers of Philadelphia. We agreed that we wanted to have a post office. And our elected representatives, acting on behalf of we the people, agreed that those postal rates, at least for the first 150 years of the existence of this country, would actually be subsidized for newspapers so as to further the goal of a well-informed electorate. In fact, they're still subsidized. Newspapers and magazines go at a cheaper rate than regular mail. So that we would have a well-informed electorate in the United States who would be able to make intelligent decisions on matters of concern. So, whose money is it? Well, I would suggest to you that if we agree collectively, that there is a priority that we collectively think should be paid for, that what we're saying when we agree to be citizens of the United States is that some of our income, some of our wealth, the part of what we own, is actually not going to be ours. That it is going to be not ours in the singular sense, not in the me ours, that it's going to be part of the we ours. The we, W-E-O-U-R-S, that is the large collective us. That we collectively are going to take and are going to own some of our wealth. Because otherwise, there's no way to have a government that functions. And we all agree, or at least most of us agree, that it is a useful thing to have a government that functions. We want our streets paved. We want our water supplies to be clean and pure. We want to know that our food is safe. We'd like to have air that we can breathe without getting cancer and emphysema and allergies and things. We would like to have knowledge of the products that we're using. There's a broad consensus about many of these things. And some of these things are more or less arguable. But in a democracy, that's why we elect people, is to debate these things. Now, we know that corporate welfare in the United States, actual cash grants to corporations, and not just tax breaks to corporations, but actually cash grants to corporations, corporate welfare in the United States, exceeds all human welfare in the United States. And so there's these folks who are going, oh, welfare this, welfare that, that's our money, we shouldn't be giving it to them. Well, in a democracy, we collectively agree on that. Now, maybe there's a problem about, do we really have a democracy if corporations have the ability to have a dozen to 100 lobbyists? I've seen both numbers. I think that the 100 lobbyists per congressperson is the most accurate figure, but it's somewhere in that spectrum. Even one lobbyist, you know. The pharmaceutical industry, for example, has two lobbyists per congressperson, just one industry. Does that skew democracy? Yes, obviously. Should that happen? Well, I personally am of the opinion that it shouldn't. And in fact, the citizens of Wisconsin for a long time felt that it shouldn't. They had a law that made it a felony for any corporation to give any money to any politician for any purpose or for the purpose of influencing legislation. It was banned. It was outlawed. Lobbying was outlawed. Corporations contributing to the campaigns of candidates was outlawed. So, the question, whose money is it? How do we fund democracy? Is this your money or is it my money? 1-800-TALK-YES. 1-800-825-5937 is the number here on the Tom Hartman radio program. And what I'm suggesting is that when the neocons suggest, when they use this magic phrase, it's your money, in reference to taxes, that what ultimately is being promoted is not democracy, but anarchy. Anarchy is where there's no government. Anarchy is where the streets are not paved. Anarchy is where the septic systems don't work, where the police are not paid. I mean, anarchy is what was going on in Iraq a couple days ago, what's going on in Afghanistan by and large right now. That's not democracy. In a democracy, we agree up front, in advance, that part of our earnings, we are going to voluntarily, intentionally, and enthusiastically, because we want to use those services. We want to have our homes safe by our police department. We want to know that the fire department will be there when we call 911. That we're going to take part of our income or part of our wealth and use that to collectively pay for those commons, for those services. Now, again, the argument about should there be, you know, should government be funding this or that program, those are very good arguments. And I am strongly of the opinion that there's a lot of stuff out there that's being funded, especially the corporate pork, which wildly outstrips the human pork, that shouldn't be funded. And that a lot of it could be cut out of the budget. I'm right there. However, to try to frame this as it's your money, they have no right to it, is to promote an agenda of anarchy. This is not the conservatism of Dwight Eisenhower or Barry Goldwater. This is the neoconservatism of anarchy, of those people who have read Ayn Rand and somehow think that the real world resembles the fictional novel of Atlas Shrugged. It doesn't. Who somehow think that government is the enemy. Well, perhaps in the Soviet Union that was true. I have been in countries where the government is the enemy. Absolutely. But this country, that should not be the case. In the United States of America, the government should be us. It should absolutely be us. David in North Carolina, listening on the Sirius satellite, would like to talk about the Nike situation. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. David? Hey, John, can you turn David on here?
I'm sorry.
There we go. Hey, David.
Okay. Very, very thought-provoking program. Really enjoy it.
Thank you. What are your thoughts?
I'm sorry?
I said, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I read your article and actually side with you very much regarding corporations being treated as people. But I was curious. You had a link on your site going to the American Civil Liberties Union, and I thought, oh, this would be great because they'll jump on the side, you know, the side that we're talking about. For some reason, though, they're siding on the Nike side, and I was wondering what their argument was. I tried to go through some of their documents, and something about letting states' rights handle something of this nature, but I don't think this is what the whole organization, from what I understand, when I called in the American Civil Liberties Union, not the whole organization doesn't seem to feel the same way as this one chapter does. In California. Do you know anything about that, or have you figured out what's going on that?
Yeah, where this started, just to bring our listeners up to speed, the Nike versus Caskey case, or Caskey versus Nike case, which was argued before the Supreme Court last Wednesday, and we did a show on this last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday. That case was basically, the setup for that was that Nike was claiming in their PR that they had cleaned up their sweatshop labor practices. There was a California activist named Mark Caskey who claimed that they were lying. He sued them in court in California for lying in their public relations under a truth in advertising consumer protection law. And Nike, rather than saying, oh no, we're telling the truth, here's the proof, said, we have the First Amendment right to lie, just like anybody, just like human beings do. Just because we're a corporation doesn't mean that we don't have First Amendment rights, and which tracks back to this 1886 Supreme Court case that I wrote this book called Unequal Protection about. And the ACLU of Northern California, I might be getting them mixed up. There's one of Northern California and one of Southern California. One of the two ACLUs in California took the position of Caskey, and one of them took the position of Nike. And the ACLU group that took the position of Nike, their perspective on it was that, well, if the Supreme Court said corporations are persons, and persons are entitled to First Amendment protections, and we as the ACLU have as our mission in life to protect and defend the First Amendment, then we should defend and protect the First Amendment's application to Nike just as we would to you know, Nazis marching in Skokie, Illinois, or anything else, you know, and all the other unpopular causes that they've championed over the years, and popular causes as well, of course. Now, what the ACLU didn't get, what they never figured out, was that the Supreme Court did not, in fact, rule that corporations are persons. But that's, and it's easy to understand why they didn't, because most law schools teach that they did. I gave a speech at the Vermont Law School here in Vermont just 4 or 5 weeks ago, had a room full of law professors and law students, and I said, how many of you think that in 1886 the Supreme Court chose to take corporations, not churches, not unions, not governments, but just corporations, out of the artificial person category and put them in with human beings as having access to the Bill of Rights? And they all raised their hands. And I had to say, you're wrong. None of you have actually read the case of Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad. So in answer to your question, the ACLU hadn't read the case. And as a result, right up to the time of the filings before the Supreme Court, the ACLU, to the best of my knowledge, was supporting Nike on this. And I think it was a terrible mistake on their part.
That's what I thought. I was really concerned after I read their justification, because it was pretty clear that they thought that Nike was treated as an individual. I thought you brought up an excellent article, and I really support every one of your issues. I went through some of your issues on your website. Excellent, excellent. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate the call, and thanks for your kind comments. I wrote a piece that's on Common Dreams. In fact, we're going to be talking about it in the next hour, commondreams.org, yesterday. It's still on the front page there. And also, if you just go there and click on my name, or if you just go to tomhartman.com and click on the political articles thing, you'll find all the op-ed pieces that I've written. Mike from Birmingham, Alabama, wants to talk about corporate money. Mike, welcome to the program.
You there?
I am. Are you?
Oh, yeah. I just heard a beep, and I thought I'd lost you there. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious about the corporate welfare. Could you be more specific on that? Because I'm sure there is some, but I'm just not familiar with what form it takes, other than the thing, like most people, that tax credits are where they get their big breaks. Can you be more specific on that, who they are and what the form of that is?
That's a great question, Mike. There have been entire books written about this. Probably one of the best of them is simply called Corporate Welfare, and I don't recall the author. And it chronicles all these huge funds. Just one example that comes to mind: a couple of years ago, I bought a Honda Insight. I think it was called the first hybrid car that was sold in the United States. I think got 70 miles to the gallon consistently. We drove it all. And here in the mountains of Vermont, I got 70 miles to the gallon. And when the year that Honda introduced that into the United States, that year, Honda had been selling that car in Japan for 6 years. If anybody wanted to figure out how a hybrid car worked, all they had to do was buy one from Honda. But that year that Honda introduced the Insight into the United States, which, as I recall, was 4 years ago, might have been 5 years ago, that year the United States government gave a $1 billion grant. That's $1,000 million divided equally between the big three automakers to develop hybrid technology. And that's one example. I mean, these kinds of things just are constantly happening. I am at this moment don't have the whole list in front of me, but I think that would make a great show topic. And I thank you. Thank you, Mike, for raising that question. In fact, next week, perhaps we'll dig into that. I'll dig out some of the statistics, because they are truly, truly mind-boggling. And when you hear about, well, you know, this legislation was scheduled to be a $30 billion thing, but it got inflated to $40 billion with pork, that's almost always what they're talking about. When they talk about pork being added to things, which you can read about in the newspapers all the time, it is never pork for you and me, or very, very rarely. Pork is money being given to corporations, because those corporations are showing up in the offices of the legislators and saying, hey, let me give you some money for your campaign. Hey, let me take you on a free golfing trip. Hey, let me fly you to Hawaii. Hey, let me fly you to, you know, and it's absolutely mind-boggling. During the during the when the Clintons had proposed their health care thing, hundreds of free trips were given to members of Congress. Right now, communications industry people are, on average, every 6 months giving $300,000 worth of free trips and other perks to members of the FCC in the hopes that in June the FCC will rule to loosen ownership requirements on radio and television stations. So I hope that answers your question, Mike. Mike is gone. Okay, thanks. Mike, thanks very much for calling. I very much appreciate it. And this is a very real problem and a very real issue here in the United States, and one that is not, unfortunately, going to be easily solved by simply passing something like McCain-Feingold. We need to have more comprehensive, deeper, more thorough campaign finance reform that has to do with getting corporations and corporate money out of politics so that politics can be for those who vote. Corporations can't vote. What are they doing in politics? It's for you and me. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Right turn, right turn, right turn, right turn back to the dealership. That's a typical test drive. Now, GM introduces the 24-hour test drive. Bring home a GM car or truck. Keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
Well, let me sleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
There are over 70 million Americans who suffer from arthritis. But for arthritis pain relief, there's only one Aleve, the medicine more and more doctors are recommending for all-day relief of pain. Doctors know Aleve can stop tough pain all day with fewer pills and Tylenol. And Aleve works right at the site of arthritis to provide fast, effective relief. Get relief doctors recommend. Aleve, arthritis pain relief that's all day strong, all day long. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain. Comparisons based on minimum 24-hour label dosing.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I didn't think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Yeah.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Program on the IE America Radio Network. Mike from Birmingham had asked how it is that corporate welfare happens. I found an article here, I just pulled it out during the break, that Molly Ivins wrote back in January 30th. It's called Politicians for Sale at Low Prices. And she said, those who give money in political contributions, less than one-tenth of 1%, that's 0.1% of the U.S. population, gave 83% of all campaign contributions in the 2002 elections, and they got back billions in tax breaks, subsidies, and the rights to exploit public land at ridiculously low prices. And then she talks about the corporate donors. For example, the top corporations that paid zero taxes, zero, nothing in taxes, from 1996 to 1998, including AT&T, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, and Philip Morris, gave $150.1 million to campaigns from 1991 to 2001. Public campaign reports, they got $55 billion in tax breaks from 96 to 98 alone. So they invest $150 million in politicians, and they get back $55,000, $55 billion. And they say that now three times as much money comes from working people's payroll taxes as from corporate tax payments. So it's a pretty grim situation. We've got Enrique from Santa Fe and Mac from Santa Fe. We're coming up on the end of the hour here, though, so if you guys can hang on over the news, I'd be glad to take you at the top of the hour, be about 5 minutes after. And just to wrap this up, the poorest, because I want to do service, you know, do justice to your questions or concerns, the poorest fifth of America pay a cumulative 18%. The richest pay a cumulative 19%, and the middle three quintiles pay 14%, 16%, and 17% in taxes. Right across the board, Americans are all pretty much paying the same when you include things like payroll taxes, sales taxes, and all other taxes. Anyhow, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. A big-name lawyer has signed on to represent Scott Peterson, who's accused of killing his wife, Lacey, and their unborn baby. He has hired Los Angeles defense attorney Mark Juragas. Peterson made the lawyer switch at a hearing today in Modesto, California. A memorial service will be held Sunday in Modesto for Lacey and the child, who was to be named Connor. President Bush has departed from the USS Abraham Lincoln off the coast of San Diego, but not before spending some quality time with the troops. Executive Officer Ron Horton spent the morning chatting with the president and says it was an amazing experience.
The president came out and said, I'd like to go up and get some fresh air, so I took him out on the flight deck. He greeted some troops, and then he and I went to the starboard side of the ship behind the island. It was just he and I, and standing there talking about the ship moving and how fast it goes and how we refuel and a whole lot of different things. It was a pretty wonderful experience to just have me standing there with the President of the United States.
Bush addressed the nation last night from the aircraft carrier to announce the end of major combat in Iraq. The president took a helicopter back to North Island this morning in advance of the carrier's arrival in San Diego. Three more top Iraqi officials have been taken into custody by the U.S. Among those who are being held is the Minister of Military Industrialization, who is now number 16 on the U.S. Most Wanted list. U.S. officials believe the minister's capture could help in the search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The nation's unemployment rate has risen to 6%, its highest level in 4 months. New Labor Department figures show the U.S. economy lost jobs last month, with the factory sector suffering the biggest losses. Workers on American payrolls declined by 48,000 last month. There's a new twist surrounding the identity of a 6-year-old Illinois boy known as Eli Quick, who is suspected to be a child missing from North Carolina over the past 2 years. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, an Illinois woman says she believes the boy is her nephew. Sherry Trendle says her sister Laura gave the boy to the man who claims to be the child's father when he was 7 or 8 months old.
Hey, we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Federal government is about to get involved in a new war, this one involving water. USA Today reports the Bush administration will unveil an initiative next week that calls on federal, state, and local officials to conserve and share water before it turns into a crisis. SARS concerns are figuring into security at the Kentucky Derby tomorrow in Louisville. A spokesman for Churchill Downs says law enforcement agencies have been briefed on recognizing possible symptoms of the disease. There are now 3 suspected cases and 1 probable case of SARS in Kentucky.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One a Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One a Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
The USS Abraham Lincoln has docked in San Diego as friends and family lined up with flags, balloons, and welcome signs. The ship had been at sea for more than 9 months, and there are reportedly 150 new fathers who have yet to see their babies. One anxious father shook with tears, knowing he was about to meet his 8-month-old son, Jacob, for the first time.
He's right there waiting on me. I just can't wait to hold him for the first time. I'm so excited. I'm ready. Ready to be a daddy.
Some of the moms dress the babies in little sailor suits with little sailor hats. And Halle Berry is gracing the cover of People magazine's 14th annual 50 Most Beautiful People issue. Among Hollywood's other hotties are actor Colin Farrell, Julia Roberts, Ben Affleck, and Elvis's daughter, Lisa Marie Presley. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. A picture's worth a thousand words, so picture this, a toilet bowl. You know what car part is similar to that household favorite? Battery? Gas tank? No, those won't float. But when I come back, I'll tell you what does.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about somesies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
What's the automotive equivalent of your toilet bowl? Your carburetor. Both have little floats that control levels of liquid. Ever lifted the top of a toilet tank and bent the rod to stop water from flowing? Carburetors have similar float valves that adjust fuel level. In toilets, the excess water streams harmlessly to the sewer. But in carburetors, surplus fuel flows into the motor, causing engine damage, decreased gas mileage, and air pollution. All good reasons to include carburetor checks in your annual inspections. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from New Mexico to Alabama, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, covering North and Central America from Alaska to Panama, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners from Europe to Asia, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're also played in encore presentation on www.radiopower.org from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And live on the IE America Radio website, www.ieamericaradio.com, from noon to 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Just to recap real quickly, this is an important point. Yesterday was May Day. May Day started in 1884 when the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions passed a resolution stating that 8 hours would constitute a legal day's work beginning on May 1st of 1886. And then they started working on getting laws passed to that effect. And Joe Hill, one of the famous union organizers over the years, who worked very hard for a 40-hour work week and ultimately was executed, some would say, for his political efforts, is somebody that I think is worth remembering here. It's just another little bit of here, Joan, and then we'll come back to our calls.
The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe. It's all
fact of the matter is that he did. And so anyway, Joe Hill, Joan Baez. We have Enrique in Santa Fe. Enrique, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for listening and thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I was a management analyst at the Health and Social Services Department, and I used to write reports on welfare fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that no more than about 20% of our caseloads were, you know, what we might call cheats. And mm-hmm. the actual fraud percentage was like 2% or less.
Right,
and,
it is very
then,
low.
Yeah, and then after the Clinton welfare reform, these percentages basically went to almost zero. You know, there's a myth of the welfare queen driving a Cadillac with big diamond rings on each finger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually a speechwriter's creation for President Ronald Reagan.
Yes, and he said that, and it turned out that there was no such woman and there was no such story, and there never has been, although it still is repeated by right-wing hosts all the time.
I know. And welfare from states and local governments, if you total it all up nationwide, it's only $54 billion. And this corporate welfare is about $1.2 trillion. So it's about 25 times the problem that welfare is. And, you know, you might think that, you know, if we didn't pay people welfare, you know, what choice would they have but French Revolution, you know, just drag the rich into the streets and take the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a strong argument. Thank you, Enrique, for that point and for that statistic. I really appreciate your call. I think that there's a strong case to be made that building a strong middle class and having a social safety net that supports the what we would call the poor, the bottom of the socioeconomic barrel, whether you know, setting aside morality and judgments and, oh, you should go to work and get a job, kid, and all that stuff, whether they're able to work or not, that is, for those people, I mean, clearly there's a lot of people who are on welfare, probably the vast majority of them, who simply do not have the means to work. They don't have the mental equipment or the physical equipment or the ability to get to work, or they live in a place where there simply are no jobs. And then, of course, there is a very small percentage of people who just don't want to, and many of them, and you find them, you know, sleeping on the streets. Many of them actually are suffering from legitimate mental illnesses, and some of them are just lazy. Although I'd say that that's a very, very tiny minority. I've worked with these people. I was the director of a residential treatment center for emotionally disturbed children for 5 years back in the 1980s, and I've worked with poor populations. Virtually all of these kids' parents were falling into these categories, and the number of people who just don't work because they don't want to and just go on the dole in the United States is infinitesimal. It's minuscule. It represents maybe 30 seconds worth of the corporate pork that's passed out in the course of a year in the United States, the money that goes to them. But anyhow, you could make the strong argument that whether we like it or not, that for the simple benefit of all of the rest of us so that we have a decent quality life and we can walk down the street without being hassled and panhandled, it's worth spending a few dollars of our tax money to create that social safety net. And in fact, Americans consistently, since the early part of this century, certainly, since the 1930s, and actually you could go back to the 1770s, where there were social welfare programs built into the United States government, the citizens of the United States have consistently said, yes, we do want to make sure that there's a certain standard of living in the United States. Mac is in Santa Fe. He's on the line. Mac, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, good. I'd like to very briefly point out a couple of things. These really are the times that try men's souls, aren't they? And I'd like to urge people to go back to our beginnings. In one of our basic documents states that we the people, that's the emphasis.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that we all must return and renew our information and our wills to with reviewing these basic documents that our country is founded on. I don't want to preach, but I urge everybody to go back to those early documents and that Tom Paine created and wrote. They're wonderful guides and reminders of our beginnings.
Yes.
I'd just like to share that idea with people, and let's take a look at our beginnings and what we're based on.
And learn from them. Thank you, Mac. I appreciate the call. It's very kind of you to call into the program. And the quote you started with, "These are the times that try men's souls," that was Thomas Paine. It was the first paragraph from the first page of the first newsletter that he published in the United States. It was later, the newsletter's name later became Common Sense, but the first issue was called The Crisis. And it was published in late 1773, and he said, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now, no doubt, shrink from the service of his country. But tyranny, like hell, is not easily overcome." And we're facing a new tyranny in America, I would say. And it's a tyranny that was not that different in some ways from the tyranny that Paine was talking about, because the tyranny that Paine was talking about was mostly the British East India Company. I wrote a book about this called Unequal Protection, and I'm not trying to flog the book, but there's a chapter that's online. You can read it for free on my website about the Boston Tea Party and the founding of this country as the first revolt against a multinational corporation. And you just go to unequalprotection.com, we'll get you there, or tomhartman.com, and you know, go to Unequal Protection, and you can read that chat, you know, give it to you for free. The publisher said you can put a couple chapters online, so I put the juiciest chapters I can get. And I absolutely agree with you, Mac. We really need to be returning to the roots and getting back to the core issues of what this country was founded on. And I tell you, this country was founded on the idea that it's about we the people. We the people, not we the corporations. Corporations are, you know, God bless them. Corporations do a lot of good, and they serve purposes very well. But they're not part of the democratic process. Corporations can't vote. Corporations were consistently always kept on a tight string in the United States, kept on a very short leash. It was illegal in most states for corporations to give money to politicians. Right up until 1886, and in many states beyond that, it was illegal for corporations to participate in campaign programs of any kind. It was illegal for them to lobby. Corporations had to have as their first item of business, in their articles of incorporation, their first purpose for incorporating the reality that their primary purpose was to serve the public. So the questions, you know, will the neocons succeed in smashing the 40-hour work week in the labor movement? And whose money is it? How do we fund democracy? Are the things that we've been talking about so far here on the program. If you have thoughts on those things, we're at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. On the Tom Hartman Show, where we're calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy this country was founded on, where corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of, because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed, where people could work to get ahead, and entrepreneurs and small business people didn't have to worry about being crushed like a bug by massive monopolistic multinational corporations. But at the same time, we didn't leave people starving in the streets. This is the vision of America that I hold, the vision that I believe our founders held explicitly, and the vision that I hope that our politicians will start to get enough courage to say no to their corporate paymasters and return to. We have in the news, in the Associated Press, day before yesterday, reported that the Treasury Department says the United States could face the prospect, this is from the AP, of not being able to pay its bills in late May unless Congress raises the government's borrowing authority, now capped at $6.4 trillion. Remember the last time this kept happening over and over and over? It was during the Reagan administration when he tried this wacky idea that in the 220 years of American history had never been tried before, which was, let's go on a credit card spending spree. You want to create prosperity? Take a credit card. You know, if you want your neighbors to think that you're rich, all you got to do, It's really simple. All you got to do is get a couple of credit, get a half a dozen credit cards with a $20,000 credit line on each one, and go out and spend $100,000 in a couple of weeks in conspicuous ways. Buy yourself a new car, get your house painted, build an addition onto it, get some new clothes, get all kinds of, you know, have, you know, boom, everybody's going to say, whoa, he's doing well. And that's what Reagan did. Reagan Bush, actually, many suggest that Reagan really wasn't quite all there, certainly during the last years of administration. George Bush really ran the country for 12 years. That's what was done during the Reagan Bush administration, and we're now paying for it, and now we've got another administration that wants to do the same thing, bring it back all over again. It's a tough challenge. What are we going to do? How do we bring this about? 1-800-TALK-YES. And we've got Brad from Milwaukee. Brad, we'll be back with you right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
It's Yo, this is Ed Lover.
This is Dr. Dre.
That's right, we in the mix for Twix, baby. Here's the mix.
Ed, I'm going to tell you right now, all from state to state, it's all about the mix.
You understand, that's how it's going down. Ed Lover and Dr. Dre style. Through the streets, just doing my thing. I need the Twix to keep me in the mix, in the swing. When I want to stay real good in the mix,
come on, y'all. Brothers, do a Twix.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this
Sunday.
For Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people. Those commentators owned by them. Dedicate the show today to the 48,000 human beings in the United States of America, 48,000 American citizens who lost their jobs last month and are now unemployed. Brad from Milwaukee, Wisconsin's on the line. Welcome to the program, Brad.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I work with a fair number of conservative people here, and I hear the same line over and over again, and it's sort of a brick wall, and it's really hard to get through that excuse that you hear so much of the time. What we give our taxes for this corporate welfare, especially here in Wisconsin, it makes jobs, is the excuse.
Right.
How do you break through that?
That's a good one. Well, you could start out by simple math. Brad, listen to this little clip here.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Now, Brad, I don't know if you have a calculator there. You can do math in your head real quick, but do you know what $550 billion divided by 1 million is?
I'm an artist, not a mathematician.
Okay. Well, $550 billion divided by 1 million is the same as 550,000 divided by 1. In other words, what he's saying is that we're going to give $550 billion to the wealthiest in America. And this doesn't include the corporate tax cuts that I've got some interesting stories in today's Wall Street Journal about, which we haven't even gotten to yet. This doesn't even include that. We're just going to give $550 billion to the wealthiest in America in the hopes that they will create 1 million jobs. That means we're going to give them $550,000 to create one job. Each one job is going to cost $550,000. Just now listen one more time and just, do the math quick in your head.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Now, he's been saying this for, 2 years, something like that? And today, for the first time in the Wall Street Journal, I saw buried in the very bottom of an article on this how, each job is going to cost, well over $100,000, and is this good math? If I gave you, Brad, $500,000, do you think you could create one job?
At least one. Hey, I got to ask you, though, where do you think it's from? Do you think he's made a mistake, or do you think this is...
No, he's not made any mistakes at all. He's pandering to his constituency. He's giving back to those people who gave to him. The reality in the United States is that in the 1998 election cycle, 96% of congressional candidates won. The 96% of the congressional candidates who spent the most in the elections were the ones who won the election.
Oh yeah.
Bush outspent Gore substantially in the last election.
I heard it was
still
double.
He lost the popular vote. Well, it wasn't double, but it was about 1.4 times more. I mean, it was just mind-boggling amounts of money. I don't have the figures at the tip of my tongue. And right now he's talking about raising $200 million for this next cycle, which is more than the Democrats in their dreams.
He said 4 years on the job to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So and right now he's going to give them that cash and they're going to say, "Cool, thank you very much. Here, let us give you some back." I mean, where's this $200 million going to come from?
Could I just plug Molly Ivan's book here?
Oh, yeah, please do. She's great.
I just finished it, and if you want to see the clearest trail of how he does business, it's there.
Really?
It's a beautiful book. It's like candy. You just open it up anywhere. It's one horrendous example after another.
Yeah, what's the title of the book, Brad?
Shrub. The Short and Happy Political Life of George Bush.
Oh, that came out like a year and a half ago, didn't it?
No, it came out before the election was over.
Ah, okay, yeah. I knew it had been around for a little while. I had, you know, I had it around here someplace. Yeah, that is a really, really good book. Well, we're coming up to the end of this half hour. Brad, thank you very much for calling. I really appreciate the call.
You're great.
And we'll be back after this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network.
Right turn, right turn, right turn, right turn, back to the dealership. That's a typical test drive. Now, GM introduces the 24-hour test drive. Bring home a GM car or truck. Keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
Well, I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
People are trying to stop the spread of insects and disease without stopping international trade. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Wooden pallets are used in shipping to move freight around the world. These wooden platforms are important for trade, but they often carry more than their intended cargo. Beetles, worms, fungus, and bacteria are just some of the organisms that ride around on pallets. In one case, researchers examined a single pallet and discovered nearly 30 different kinds of insects. Carrie Britton is a forest pathologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She says the wood that's used for pallets often comes from trees that already had been weakened by insects or disease.
There's probably billions of pallets that move around each year with very inferior wood. And sometimes the reason those trees died too young to become anything but a pallet is because they had insects or diseases.
Imported diseases and pests have caused serious economic and environmental damage around the world. Britton says people are looking for ways to fight this problem.
The regulatory community all over the world realize that this is a major problem, and they're working on trying to develop regulations and ways of, you know, requiring that the wood be treated either with heat or fumigants like methyl bromide.
Britton says modern transportation helps foreign organisms survive the trip between continents.
They can travel across the ocean. We have such rapid transit now that they arrive still alive, and they just crawl out and look for a new home.
Pallets are not the only problem. Invasive species sometimes travel in wood chips and other wood that's used for packing material. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Ooh. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, where we do not get our talking points from right-wing think tanks or the daily talking points sent out to talk show hosts all across the United States by the RNC. Instead, we look at the news, we ask the question, what's going on with democracy right now? And that's the question that we're constantly trying to answer, or at least get some insight into, some understanding of. What is democracy? How does it work? How can we return it to the United States of America, the land of its modern birth, several thousand years after the Greeks flirted with it, and 6,000 years after the beginning of civilization in northern Iraq, in what was then called Mesopotamia, where Gilgamesh rose up and started the first major city. So, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, he's not what you would call a dumb guy. This is somebody who has some understanding of economics. And he has something to say about our question, whose money is it? How do you fund democracy? What's the issue with the tax breaks here? And he says, this is from the Associated Press today, kind of buried in the back of the paper. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan undercut President Bush's case for a new tax cut Wednesday, saying a provision the White House badly wants should be offset by, guess what, folks? Guess what Greenspan says should offset Bush's tax cut? Tax increases. What? It's like you can't just go spending money on your credit card and not ultimately have to pay it. If we went on this credit card spending binge, yeah, we can have prosperity. But somebody's got to pay the bill. And not only that, somebody's got to pay the interest. And the interest is no small amount. A good chunk of the taxes that you pay every time taxes are taken out of your pay cut is going to pay interest on the $6 trillion American debt. And Ken from Fort Lauderdale is on the air. He wants to talk about Bush and his performance last night. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind, Ken?
Well, I would love to know what government agency. Is it the Office of Management Budget? I'm not that experienced in these things. Who do you find out how much something like last night cost? That shameful display on the aircraft carrier, that made-for-television event that we foot. How do you find out? And I also want to know, in the same context, sir, how do you find out how much it costs taxpayers to drag Mushmouth and his whole contingent around to Texas every weekend, to Camp David? I mean, it's got to have some kind of build to it to take his whole entourage all over the place if he had any interest in staying in the White House to begin with.
Ken, you raise a good point. I don't think it's one that's unique to George Bush, though. I mean, Bill Clinton was certainly fond of traveling around the United States, too.
Well, but at the same time, I don't even think he saw Camp David till the second administration. Mm. And it just seems like whether or not you agreed with Bill Clinton and any number of his policies, the man still did seem engaged in his work.
Yeah, and also during the Clinton Gore administration, there were very strict controls in place where politicians reimbursed the government based on the criteria was first class airfare, so it was still a subsidy. But when they were transported anywhere for anything that had to do with fundraising, they had to pay back the government. And in fact, George Bush observed those rules during the campaign when he used Ken Lay's private jet. For a huge percentage, a real significant percentage of his campaign trips all around the United States, he was flying around in Ken Lay's personal Enron jet. And he reimbursed Enron, even though the cost to operate a private jet, and this was a fairly large one, could be $5,000, $10,000 an hour, he reimbursed Enron at the rate of whatever, say he flies from Dallas to Portland, Oregon, whatever a first-class ticket between Dallas and Portland would be on, say, United Airlines, say it's $1,200, that's what he would reimburse Enron for, and that satisfied the federal requirements. Of course, that's the same thing that Clinton was doing, and this came out of a campaign campaign finance reform legislation that happened earlier. But your point about Bush kicking off his campaign yesterday, it's interesting that the Wall Street Journal is thinking along the same lines. And in their politics and policy column today, the headline is Bush prepares for electoral combat. And the subhead says, as Iraq war nears an end, a broader political agenda is taking shape for 2004. And here's the opening paragraph. President Bush was preparing to go before the country last night to declare an end to significant combat in Iraq. What he wasn't saying is that the moment also marks the beginning of his 2004 reelection campaign. Well, as to the answer to your question, how do you find out? I don't have a clue. I would bet you just about anything that this is, that these figures are completely buried someplace. Have you made any efforts to find out? Have you called anybody? You called your congressperson or anything like that?
Well, I have some troubles with my own senators, not just in terms of their seeming unwillingness to respond to anything in detail. You write and you get a form letter back on a issue policy statement and avoid any specifics.
Mm.
But and it's just beginning to get to me now. So to be honest, sir, I haven't made the full initiative. But I just think it's something that we should all be questioning.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that there is a time and place for presidents and for other political candidates to be speaking to the public. I think it's very important. This president has given fewer press conferences where he was actually questioned by the press than any president since the invention of television.
They're not called press conferences anymore. They're news conferences.
Yeah, well, whatever you call them.
They changed that dynamic.
To say this is not our press to you. This is we are making the news.
It's a subtle distinction, but this regime does not call them press conferences anymore.
That's interesting. They're very good at news speak. They've been reading their George Orwell.
Mm-hmm. That's the time we're living in. Anyway, thank you for your time, sir.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Ken. I appreciate it. Ken in Fort Lauderdale. Here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. That's 1-800-825-5937. The Wall Street Journal continues, already there are signs Mr. Bush is intensifying his political activity, and they talk about a program that's coming up, is it next week? No, it's in June, where donors can buy tables for $25,000 each as a contribution to his upcoming campaign. Now, again, we have to acknowledge the Democrats are doing the same thing. These are indications, in my opinion, of a broken system. It's easy to vilify George Bush, or at least it's easy for those of us who disagree with many of his policies. He has done some things very well and very right, but he's done a lot of things, in my opinion, very wrong and very destructive to our environment, to working people, to our tax system, and he is burdening my children and my grandchildren with enormous debts for no good reason other than to pay back the people who gave him the money to win his place in office, in my opinion. That said, this is also true of the Democrats, and to some extent, even some of the third parties. This is not a problem of bad people necessarily. And we can say, well, yeah, okay, this guy is awful, this guy is bad, and certainly there's a long list of politicians who are corrupt, who are engaging in behavior that certainly is questionable in terms of its morality, in terms of its effect on democracy, in terms of its appropriateness. Absolutely. And I would put this administration right at the top of that list, although I also had some very bad problems with the Clinton administration, particularly their support of NAFTA and WTO GATT. But this is really an indication, not of bad people, but of a broken system. We have in the United States what we once believed was a representative democracy, a constitutional democratic republic, and has become, in large part because of decisions by the Supreme Court, has become a corporate plutocracy, a kleptocracy, a new kind of aristocracy. And one of my big concerns is, I remember years ago, in 1963, when Jack Kennedy went to Dallas, Texas, and got shot. When he showed up in Dallas, Texas, there was a black bordered ad in the Dallas newspaper condemning him in very, very forceful terms. And implying that he wasn't fit for office and that he should be thrown out, and even some would say subtly suggesting that he should be the victim of violence. And there were billboards all across the United States that said impeach Earl Warren. And what people were so upset about was that Kennedy was allowing Earl Warren to remain on the Supreme Court. That's what this specific ad was about the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in the years since then, with the Reagan-Bush appointments, and so, and I'd have to go back and look at who was appointed when. I think we have at least one Nixon appointee on the court, or a Ford appointee, and Reagan-Bush appointees, and Bush appointees, that the court has shifted from defending the rights of individuals to defending the rights of corporations. The big turn happened in the 5-4 1978 Boston versus Bilotti case, when the court ruled that corporations could give money to politicians in virtually unlimited fashion and make it tax deductible, and it didn't even have to be about their business. Corporations became super voters. They can't vote. I mean, what are they doing in politics? But they became super citizens, as it were. When we talk about corporate citizen, there is no such thing. Corporations are not citizens. They're absolutely not citizens. And, you know, what are they doing exercising the rights of citizenship? I think it's just absolutely, it's the wrong thing. So how do we fund democracy? Whose money is it? What is the function of taxation in a democracy? I would suggest that the function of taxation is to provide for the common good in a way that we have all agreed on, not without the influence of corporations, that we, the people, agree. These are things that we need to make our lives function. We need pure air. We need fresh water. We need police and fire, and we need a military that works. And we need there's a long list. It's no shortage of things that we can come up with. And as we get farther down the list, the debates become more and more appropriate and more heated. Well, do we really need this? Do we really need that? You know, that's wonderful. That's what a democracy is about. We should be having those debates. But we're not having those debates. You're not seeing those debates in the newspaper. These things are being debated every day in Congress. Congress is passing spending appropriations, passing legislation that spends hundreds of millions of dollars every week. And are you and I hearing about the debates? No. Because these are debates that are being held between lobbyists, between dueling factions. Well, you know, the defense industry would rather have this money, but the pharmaceutical industry wants this money. What about the automotive industry? Well, what about this? And, you know, you talk about special interests. There they are. Now here comes another interesting outrage that I want to share with you here on the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. And if you'd like to comment on these things, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our number. From today's Wall Street Journal, a parade of big companies is under investigation for inflating their earnings during the stock market boom of the 1990s. Well, we all knew that, right? Now some of them see an unusual silver lining. They want back the taxes they overpaid along the way. And they go on to point out how MCI and Enron are asking for tax refunds because they paid taxes on money that they didn't actually make. They were lying to their stockholders so that the CEOs could exercise their stock options, stick all kinds of cash in their pockets, run away from their companies, leave the stockholders and investors holding the bag, and now the corporation is going to the government saying, well, you know, give us back those taxes. The journal says, no one knows yet just how much the federal government could have to forfeit in the refunds and credits, but it will probably be hundreds of millions of dollars. And they talk about MCI, which used to be called WorldCom. Accounting irregularities are now expected to reach $11 billion. And in Alabama, HealthSouth said that by inflating its income, it overpaid more than $300 million in federal taxes, and it would like $300 million back from the government. In USA Today on Thursday the 24th of April, they said this is their editorial on their op-ed page, the federal government is on track to accumulate an unprecedented shortfall of $400 billion this year, or $3,600 for every family. That's just this year's shortfall. $3,600 per family. If you want a way to quickly do the math on this stuff, and this is what USA Today was using, There are roughly 100 million working families in America. And a billion is 1,000 million. And so a billion is 10 times 100 million. Not to get too complex in the math here, but basically, we've got 100 million people. That means that every $1 billion that the government spends is $10 per average family. So if you see, for example, that the government says, well, we're going to spend $75 billion for the war in Iraq, what does that mean to you and me? Now, you just add a zero to the end of the number. That means $750 out of your pocket and mine. Now, there's a lot of... This really qualifies as fuzzy math. I mean, I tell you right up front, on the one hand, because there are certainly different people in different pay, different tax brackets are going to be paying different percentages of this. But on the other hand, when you consider that all taxes ultimately, you know, it kind of all filters down. I mean, government is operating out of revenue that's an aggregate thing, and that the top fifth of America wage payers are paying 19% in cumulative taxes. The middle three quintiles are paying 14%, 16%, and 17%. And the bottom fifth pays 18% of their income in taxes. So pretty much we're all paying about the same when you aggregate all the different taxes. And what you see is that it really is. When you just add a zero to the end of a billion, $73,730 out of your pocket and mine. Reasonably logical. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man. I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
When we bought this house, I really loved all the open space nearby.
Me too.
Too bad our real estate agent never mentioned what they had planned for that space.
Four!
Yeah. Too bad. Want to find the right real estate agent for you? Come to LendingTree.com. We'll personally match you with a LendingTree certified real estate agent, provide access to home listings, even a $1,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE or click on LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Look, if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Good News Week. Families shake the need for gold by stimulating birth control. We're wanting less to eat. It's Good News Week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Just taking care of a little housekeeping here. Let you know that Monday I won't be here. I'll be here. You'll hear my voice. It'll be a repeat of a program that we ran earlier in this week or last. I'll be in Virginia, in Portsmouth, Virginia, speaking at the National Attention Deficit Disorder Association meeting. Their website is add.org on that topic, which is not generally the topic of this show, but something that I've written a couple of books about and used to work with kids on. And that's about the main housekeeping thing. We've been talking about whose money is it? How do we fund the federal government? And I remember the other thing I wanted to say there. Somebody called during the break and asked if I would put up on the website the clips from the various news stories that I've read today. Just want to let you know that with one exception, every news story that I've read today came from either today's New York Times or today's Wall Street Journal. There are some great news sources out there, and I recommend them to you. www.commondreams.org, opednews.org, alternet.org, bushwatch.org, as I recall. There's a whole bunch of very good websites. Guerrilla News Network, I think that's gnn.org. I don't have a list, right? There is a list of those on my website at tomhartman.com, and you go to the show homepage, and there's a list of good news sources, and you'll find many of these kinds of things. But I've been wanting to just really bring you the mainstream debate that's going on. There's lots and lots of stuff outside of that, but also, you don't have to dig very deep to find this stuff. I mean, it's just right there. And the interesting thing about the Wall Street Journal and Business Week and Forbes and Fortune and Barron's, I encourage you to read these publications, because this is that group of people who have taken control of our government talking to themselves. And, for example, whenever unemployment goes up, you'll find them celebrating it. They're actually talking about how wonderful it is, what a great thing it is, how it's going to make it harder for labor to get organized or to ask for more pay. Anyway, thank you very much for being with us again. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. See you next week.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nets in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the siren.
been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.